The United States, second to none. It was Jacqueline's and her husband's fondest dream to bring the greatest artist to America and to bring America's greatest artist to Washington and to the American people. Both of them dreamed of establishing a permanent cultural center in Washington, a cultural center that would belong to the American people. The American people understood and appreciated the First Lady, the fairy princess in the White House who was warm and human and spontaneous when she visited cities and towns around the country with her husband. These qualities made her one of her husband's greatest political assets. She began to enjoy the political tours. She enjoyed meeting people. She enjoyed the life which had been her husband's from birth. And in this way, she helped shape the course of political affairs, which are the foundation stones of history. But history brought one terrible moment of tragedy, of personal tragedy, to Jacqueline Kennedy. On a bright and sunny day in Dallas, a bullet killed the man she loved, the father of her children, the President of the United States. In one moment, she knew the happiness of love and the loss of love. In one moment, she was utterly and completely alone with her sorrow as the sudden and senseless shot rang out and killed John Fitzgerald Kennedy. We, all of us, were witness to that tragedy, and we all felt a sense of shock, of dismay, of bereavement, bewilderment. But it was she to whom this tragedy was personal.
A loved one laid his head in her lap. Red roses fell to the floor, and a world stood still.
A moment later, a United States senator, when informed of the news, shook his head uncomprehendingly. Oh, my God, what is this world coming to, was all that he could say.
We are deeply shocked by this sad and tragic news of the killing of the President of the United States of America, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, and the serious wounding of Governor Connally. And we are profoundly saddened by so dastardly a crime, by the mourning which afflicts a great and civilized country in its head, by the suffering which strikes at Mrs. Kennedy, her children, and the family. With all our hearts, we deplore this unhappy event. We express the heartfelt wish that the death of this great statesman may not damage the cause of the American people, but rather reinforce its moral and civil sentiments and strengthen its feelings of nobility and concord. And we pray to God that the sacrifice of John Kennedy may be made to favor the cause he promoted and to help defend the freedom of peoples and peace in the world. He was the first Catholic president of the United States. We recall our pleasure in receiving its visit and in having discerned in him great wisdom and high resolution for the good of humanity. Tomorrow, we shall offer the holy sacrifice of the Mass that God may grant him eternal rest, that he may comfort and console all those who weep for him in his death, and in order that not hatred but Christian love should reign among all mankind.
A prince of the church, a newspaper vendor, the famous, the unknown, all said the same, different words perhaps, different inflections, but each reflected one thought. And from one end of the country to the other, within minutes, from one end of the world to the other, men asked each other, dumbly, uncomprehendingly, the same. Oh my God, what is this world coming to? In Berlin, which only such a short time ago as history goes, which had been the capital of an enemy nation, there was shock, consternation, dismay, visible on every face on the Western sector when the news reached the former German capital. That night, thousands of candles lit up the windows of German homes. of homes of men and women who had put their faith, their trust, and hope in America as represented by John Fitzgerald Kennedy. In a Middle Eastern desert, an elder statesman, when he heard the news, could only say, "Why? Why?" The why will never be answered. Even the man from Texas who was thrust into this fantastic real-life drama found it difficult to believe.
This is a sad time for all people. We have suffered a loss that cannot be waived. For me, it is a deep personal tragedy. I know that the world shares the sorrow that Mrs. Kennedy and her family bear. I will do my best. That is all I can do. I ask for your help and God's.
If Jacqueline Kennedy ever asked herself the terrible question, why, she gave no public indication of it during the following tragic, harrowing days. She called on all her inner resources, and she faced what had to be faced with the calm dignity and serene repose of a woman molded in a heroic mold. A woman of heroic mold in its most magnanimous sense, unmindful of her wifely role, dissipating her own tears by motivating a nation, a world, through her courage. Never more fully did the scripture speak, as made manifest through this brave heart. Ye stand by faith. A faith that reached out and gave to another family, another woman whose loss was just as great, another father, another husband who had fallen the same day, the same way, with the same terrible consequence. She never left her husband's side but for a few brief hours. And even then, as I said, her thoughts were not of herself, but of others. Such was the courage, such was the humanity of that woman. And now a flag is lowered. A Navy hymn rings out across a solemn, silent world. And Jacqueline Kennedy walks, her head held proudly, behind the casket of her loved one. The world mourns with her. But though she mourns, she will also carry on in the spirit of her martyred husband. Now, there is one moment which brings the tears to the eyes of millions. Her two children, Carolyn and little John John, beside her. And suddenly, the little boy bravely raising his tiny hand in salute to his hero, his father. In that brief moment, there was an awful silence all over America. In that brief moment, the hearts of millions of Americans stood still. In that brief moment, we all shared the true tragedy that had befallen Jacqueline Kennedy. It was almost as if the little boy had known the words Shakespeare used about another great democratic leader in Roman times. His life was gentle, and the elements so mixed in him that nature might stand up and say to all the world, he was a man.
Only last Thursday, as evidence of this rapid offensive buildup was already in my hand, Soviet Foreign Minister Gromyko told me in my office that he was instructed to make it clear once again, as he said his government had already done, that Soviet assistance to Cuba, and I quote, pursued solely the purpose of contributing to the defense capabilities of Cuba, unquote. Neither the United States of America nor the world community of nations can tolerate deliberate deception and offensive threats on the part of any nation, large or small. We no longer live in a world where only the actual firing of weapons represents a sufficient challenge to a nation's security to constitute maximum peril. Nuclear weapons are so destructive, and ballistic missiles are so swift, that any substantially increased possibility of their use or any sudden change in their deployment may well be regarded as a definite threat to peace. In violation of Soviet assurances and in defiance of American and hemispheric policy, this sudden, clandestine decision to station strategic weapons for the first time outside of Soviet soil is a deliberately provocative and unjustified change in the status quo, which cannot be accepted by this country. If our courage and our commitments are ever to be trusted again by either friend or foe. Our policy has been one of patience and restraint, as befits a peaceful and powerful nation which leads a worldwide alliance. We have been determined not to be diverted from our central concerns by mere irritants and fanatics. But now further action is required, and it is underway, and these actions may only be the beginning. We will not prematurely or unnecessarily risk the course of worldwide nuclear war, in which even the fruits of victory would be ashes in our mouth.
The silencing of that voice, the loss of that life, of such a gentle life, was a tragedy such as that which Shakespeare was thinking about. But Jacqueline Kennedy had a deep, abiding faith that she shared with her husband. It is his legacy that she wishes to carry on and fulfill. It can be said of her what her husband said. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. And they shall walk and not faint. There was strength, courage, and faith in that woman in those 3 days which followed the shot that was heard literally from one end of the world to the other. She had the same kind of faith, unshakable, deep, and complete, that her husband had had. She knew his mind, and she understood the meaning of his dedication to and his faith in America. You and I are charged with obligations to serve the great republic
in years of great crisis. The problems we face are complex, but the pressures are immense, and both the perils and the opportunities are greater than any nation ever faced. In such a time, the limits of mere human endeavor become more apparent than ever. We cannot depend solely on our material wealth, on our military might, or on an intellectual skill or physical courage to see us safely through the seas that we must sail in the months and years to come. Along with all of these, we need faith. We need the faith which our first settlers crossed the sea to carve out a state in the wilderness, a mission, they said, in the Pilgrim's Compact, the Mayflower Compact, undertaken for the glory of God. We need the faith with which our founding fathers proudly proclaimed the independence of this country to what seemed at that time an almost hopeless struggle, pledging their lives, their fortunes, and
their sacred honor with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. As violet shadows closed the day, alone, she returned to her loved one's resting place and knelt. No one but she alone knew precisely what thoughts were in her mind. Perhaps in that moment,
the nocturnal king of night lighted the heavens with his golden torch, and evening, as if loath to leave the beautiful scene, pulled her curtain down and pinned it with a star.
In the still of night, whisper quiet, this bereaved but courageous heart lingered at that rose-strewn spot.
Urns of roses dripping o'er, primrose paths to make a floor, lovebirds nestled in the trees, a sacred hymn to swell the breeze, everywhere a pleasant word, then God's precious voice is heard. This the mansion high above, Christ said God, prepared with love. Here he teaches in this bower how to make a tender flower, tucks our loved ones down to rest in this place that they love best, dimly lights the evening star, keeping watch where'er they are. Let not tears make life seem o'er, their souls live forevermore.
Perhaps she was also thinking of the last words which her husband was destined never to speak out loud. He said, "We in this country, in this generation, are by destiny rather than choice the watchmen on the walls of world freedom. We ask, therefore, that we may be worthy of our power and responsibility, that we may exercise our strength with wisdom and restraint, and that we may achieve in our time and for all time the ancient vision of peace on earth, goodwill toward men. That must always be our goal, and the righteousness of our cause must always underlie our strength. For as was written long ago, except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. Perhaps in that moment she knew that he had left her an unfinished mission.
To finish the broken refrain, the broken sentiment he started in our lives.
And so she stood on that Arlington Hill and lighted the flame on that sacred rill, teaching the hearts that would come and go to trust in this light of eternal glow.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
And as she gave America courage and a faith to live by, she answered the memorable words of her husband, "This is what I can do for my country."